Right now, somewhere near you, data is moving through the air. Quite literally, audio, images, messages. Invisible signals moving between devices, passing through walls and through your body before resolving into something your senses can receive. You're not thinking about it. You don't need to. It simply works. And somewhere along the way, it stopped feeling remarkable. We live inside an invisible architecture of signal and transmission. And we accept it so completely that it has become a kind of background, like oxygen itself, present everywhere, noticed almost nowhere. The scale of it is genuinely difficult to absorb, because the visible world turns out to be the exception, not the rule. The electromagnetic spectrum, the full range of energy frequencies that exist in the universe, includes radio waves, microwaves, infrared, ultraviolet, X-rays, and gamma rays. Of that entire spectrum, visible light is less than 0.005%. Less than a fraction of a fraction. The rest is there, measurable, documented, operating continuously all around us. We've built instruments to detect it, technologies to harness it, entire industries organized around it. We don't question whether it exists simply because we can't see it. The evidence is in the device in your pocket, the signal reaching your radio, the heat you feel from a fire before your hand gets close enough to burn. By the plain definition of physics, most of reality is already invisible. And if that's true, if we are already immersed in a vast field of forces we cannot directly perceive, then perhaps the more honest question isn't whether the invisible exists. It's why we keep demanding that some of it prove itself, while the rest we simply use without a second thought. Episode 4, The Invisible Architecture. History suggests that what we can perceive has never been the limit of what is there. Long before we learned to measure it, the natural world was already navigating it. Consider the honeybee. When a bee lands on a flower, it doesn't only collect nectar. It leaves a trace. The flower's electric field changes after each visit, carrying information the next arriving bee can detect. Not through sight, not through smell, through a sensitivity to electrical charge that we are only beginning to understand and measure. The flower is broadcasting. The bee is receiving. A conversation is happening in a register we didn't know existed until recently. Birds navigate by an equally invisible force, one we can measure but never directly see. A protein in the avian eye called cryptochrome allows certain species to perceive magnetic fields directly. Not as sensation exactly, but as something closer to seeing. The Earth's magnetic field becomes part of their visual landscape. They don't consult it. They simply move through the world with a layer of information available to them that is entirely invisible to us. Elephants speak below the threshold of human hearing. Infrasound, frequencies too low for our ears to register, travels through the ground across distances of several miles. A herd communicates, coordinates, responds to one another through a medium we can't access without instruments. They are having a conversation in a frequency we walk through without knowing it's there. Dogs have been documented detecting cancer, predicting seizures, sensing shifts in human physiology that precede any visible symptom by hours or days. The mechanism is scent, operating at a sensitivity so far beyond our own that it barely seems like the same sense. They are reading something real, something the body is transmitting, whether we intend it to or not. Beneath the forest floor, mycorrhizal fungi thread through the root systems of trees, forming networks through which chemical signals and nutrients move between connected plants. A tree under stress communicates that stress to trees it has never physically touched. The signals themselves, the conversation, are completely invisible. A forest is not merely a collection of individuals. It is a living network. None of this is contested. None of this requires belief in anything beyond what has already been measured and documented. It is simply what the world is doing, has always been doing, in frequencies and fields and registers that our unaided senses were never built to detect. And then there is the body itself. The heart generates an electromagnetic field that extends several feet beyond the skin. We are not contained where we appear to end. The enteric nervous system, the network of neurons lining the gut, contains approximately 500 million nerve cells. It processes information independently of the brain. And the majority of signals between the gut and the brain travel upward, not down. The body is not waiting for instruction. It knows before you do, already responding before the mind has caught up. The felt sense of something being wrong or right before the mind has assembled a reason, that is not imagination. That is a second intelligence, operating in parallel, fluent in a language that thought arrives at only later, if at all. The earth carries its own rhythm, a set of electromagnetic resonances sustained within the cavity between the earth's surface and its ionosphere. Scientists call it the Schumann resonance, an intrinsic frequency continuously present, brought into expression again and again by lightning. It is present continuously, enveloping the planet whether we notice it or not. We live within it much the same way a fish lives within water, immersed in a field that remains largely invisible to the creatures moving through it. Whether or not we are influenced by such fields in ways we do not yet understand remains an open question. What is clear is that human beings have long sensed that certain places feel different from others. Long before we could measure fields, frequencies, or geological anomalies, people were already responding to something. The invisible architecture was never hidden. It was simply waiting for us to develop the instruments or the stillness to notice it was there. I want want to tell you about a room. The ceiling was low, with stained and dated foam tiles, the kind that signal institutional ugliness and despair. The walls were painted a tone of beige that had been chosen by someone who had stopped caring. The fluorescent lights were purposefully off, and a small window offered almost nothing in the way of natural light. Metal folding chairs were arranged in pairs, each occupied by a stranger. I was there for a Reiki certification class, first level. I had done enough reading to be curious and enough thinking to be doubtful. The room held 15 or 20 people, each paired with a stranger they had never met, each in their own version of this same strange experiment. As part of the class, we would practice on each other. I sat down in my chair, and a stranger began to work on me. She never touched me. Her hands moved slowly over my body, hovering just inches above the surface, from my head downward. I noticed the faint smell of garlic on her breath. My mind was running. What exactly have I gotten myself into? But I made the deliberate effort to set that down, to stay open, to see what, if anything, was actually here. Behind my closed eyes, a subtle field of blue appeared over the black void, forms taking shape within it and then dissolving again. As though the image could never quite decide what it wanted to become. I don't know how long I sat inside that. Long enough that the mind chatter had mostly settled. Long enough that something else had moved into the foreground. When she reached my knees, something shifted. And then, without warning, and without any preceding thought, the sobbing began. Nothing in that room had caused this. Nothing had happened. I was safe. Tears came that I couldn't explain and I couldn't stop. I tried. I pressed them back with everything I had, aware that 15 or 20 strangers could hear me, aware that nothing in that room had warranted this. It made no sense. And it kept coming anyway. Something was releasing. I had no idea what it was, only that it felt older than the moment itself and had gathered more force than I could hold back. She kept her hands exactly where they were. She didn't look up. Whatever was releasing felt foreign to my own interior, not because it seemed to come from somewhere else, but because I had no conscious relationship to it. It felt dense, accumulated, older than the moment. I sat there afterward in a confusion I didn't know what to do with. I wasn't frightened, and I wasn't suddenly converted to anything. I simply couldn't locate a rational explanation for what had just happened in my body. And what sat alongside the confusion was embarrassment, plain and uncomfortable. The kind that arrives when something real happens in front of other people, before you've had a chance to understand it yourself. I hadn't asked for this. I hadn't expected it. And I had no language for it yet. She was a first level student. 2 days of training. The same as me. There's a word for what happens on the other side of reception, inside the awareness of whatever is doing the receiving. Philosophers call it qualia. It's the redness of red, the specific quality of what cold feels like against skin, the difference between knowing that music is playing and actually hearing it. the way a particular chord can arrive in the chest before the mind has had a chance to name what it's feeling. Qualia are the felt textures of experience, irreducibly subjective, impossible to fully transfer from one consciousness to another. You can try to describe red to someone who has never seen it, precisely and at length, and they will still not know what red is. When a Bluetooth signal reaches its device, something translates. Invisible transmission becomes audible sound. Data becomes image. The device doesn't experience the music. It renders it. But somewhere in the gap between signal and experience, in the moment when information becomes sensation, consciousness enters the picture. And consciousness remains one of the most unresolved questions in science and philosophy. The deeper the investigation goes, the more it resists the kind of answers our current frameworks are built to provide. Which means that at the most fundamental level of what we know, there is already an open door. And what waits on the other side isn't consciousness itself. That's already being taken seriously. It's everything we dismiss because we can't measure it. The felt, the sensed, the known without knowing. Most people have experienced moments that don't fit neatly inside explanation. Thinking about someone just before they call. Walking into a room and immediately sensing tension before a word is spoken. Knowing something was wrong before evidence arrived. Feeling connected to someone across distance in a way logic cannot fully account for. These experiences are so common that we rarely stop to examine them seriously. We dismiss them almost as quickly as they occur. Not necessarily because they are false, but because our culture has trained us to distrust anything that arrives through feeling before measurement. And not everything we feel originates somewhere beyond us. A tuning fork doesn't receive its frequency from elsewhere. The frequency is intrinsic to its structure. Strike it, and what emerges was always there, held within the physical form, waiting for the conditions to become audible. The fork doesn't generate something new. It reveals what was already resonant within it. Some experiences arrive like reception, as though something has moved from one place to another. Others feel less like transmission and more like recognition, as though something long held beneath awareness has finally found the conditions to emerge. I don't know what was happening in that room. I don't know the mechanism, and I've stopped needing to. What I know is that something that had been held for a long time, in a place I hadn't known to look, found its way out. Something in that space dislodged it. The stillness, the surrender, the hands of a first-level student who had no idea what she was about to release, created the conditions for it to finally move. The tuning fork doesn't explain itself. It simply sounds. Every instrument we have ever built was built to see something we couldn't see before. The telescope revealed stars that were already there. The microscope exposed a cellular world that had existed long before we could see it. Radio receivers made perceptible a field of signals that had previously passed unnoticed through the air. each began as a conviction that something was there before we had the means to confirm it, that the invisible, patiently present, was waiting for us to develop the capacity to meet it. And every time, the boundary of what we call real expanded. We are still building, still extending the edge of what we can detect, measure, confirm. That is science at its best. Not a closed system of settled answers, but an ongoing encounter with a world that keeps revealing itself to be larger than we thought. And confirmed knowledge has never been the whole of it. There are things we know that we cannot prove. Things felt, experienced, sensed at a level beneath language, that arrive with a quality of certainty no external confirmation has yet supplied, and may never fully supply. That knowing is not nothing. And perhaps the deepest questions have always lived here, at the edge between what can be measured and what can only be experienced. Questions about the nature of being itself, about what organizes reality beneath the surface of what we can see, about whether reality is ultimately as divided and self-contained as we have been taught to believe. It is not delusion or wishful thinking or a failure of rigor. For some of the most fundamental questions we carry about consciousness, about connection, about what it means to be alive inside a body in continuous relationship with a world far larger than we can see, knowing may be exactly enough, may have to be enough, may be all we ever get. The courage this requires is real, because the labels arrive quickly. Unscientific, unproven, anecdotal, fringe. They function less as genuine assessments and more as knee-jerk reactions. A signal that you've wandered outside the boundary, that your question isn't worth asking. And for many people, that is enough to stop looking, to dismiss what they felt before they've had a chance to examine it honestly, to hand back an experience that was real simply because no one has yet found a way to confirm it. Some of the most significant expansions of human understanding didn't begin with better tools. They began with someone willing to take their own experience seriously, to sit with something that didn't yet have a name, to follow the edge of a question the prevailing consensus had already decided wasn't worth asking. That takes something. It takes the willingness to look past the label toward what's actually there. We are receivers. We are also instruments, shaped by evolution, experience, and something we don't yet have complete language for, into beings capable of detecting frequencies, patterns, and presences that our current frameworks cannot always contain. Sometimes the instrument is us. And sometimes what it reveals in a dim room, on a folding chair, with a field of blue behind closed eyes, turns out to be more real than anything we walked in expecting to find. I'm Lindsay. Thanks for spending some time in the space between. I'll see you in the next one. If this series has opened something for you, please consider sharing it. independent work like this relies on listeners to sustain it. And if you'd like to support it directly, you can find a link in the show notes. Additional information about this series can be found at spacebetween.fm.